And it's unbelievable that I'm standing up here introducing my husband tonight to speak to you guys. So go get him.
Well, good evening, everybody. How are y'all doing? My name's Paul, and I am indeed an alcoholic, and it's a pleasure to be here tonight. Well, as most of you probably know, I was born in England, 1968, not Kentucky. I was raised in a very rural village. Everybody knew everybody. It was farms, very serene, peaceful. And, you know, I hear a lot of stories in here, people who come from broken backgrounds, dysfunctional families. I had none of that. I had a golden childhood. I had people who loved me. No fighting, no arguing. So, you know, where this came from, I don't know, but it came to me somehow. My first taste of alcohol was when I was around 5 years old. I was out at a buddy of mine. I used to play with a next-door neighbor. His dad had a builder's yard. We were about 5 years old, and we used to mess around in the sand, go into the work sheds, and, you know, just get up to stuff kids get up to. And his dad made homebrew. And my mum told me the story, actually. She said, I saw him walking down the lane, and he was looking funny. He was wobbling, and he looked like he wasn't there. And she told me, you know, I came in, passed out, and weed my pants. So that was my first taste. I don't remember that, but maybe that was something that kind of put it into my mind. My drinking started when I was 14 years old, and it started not for the effect of it. It was really the image. I felt, hey, I want to look older. I want everybody to look at me, and, you know, the pride and the ego started at such a young age for me. And the more I went on with that, then obviously, you know, I was getting drunk, and I like that feeling. I love that feeling. I remember we have in England, we have a store, it's called an off license, and it's not a public house, a pub, and you can actually go in and buy booze. And I used to stand out there, I mean, totally looking like 14 years old, and I'd just get the nearest guy, hey, mate, can you go in and buy me some beer? And they'd walk in and buy me it. They'd go in and buy me the beer, and I'd go off and we'd go drinking. I started going around the pubs in a town close to my village called Normanton. And, you know, I felt I was fitting in with all the old crowd then. And I had older guys, like, in the 40s egging me on drinking. You know, I mean, it's crazy. They were telling me to knock the pints back. And I did. I didn't think anything about it. And it was all the feeling, you know, it's all life's a party. And that's how it started. I progressed going into the city, into the nightclubs, you know, 16, up to 18. And it just got worse, you know. It was all about the party. It was all about how I looked. Trying to impress the girls, you know. It was about that time I got involved in England. There was a really, some of you may have heard, bad problem with football hooliganism, soccer hooliganism. And I got involved with like a crew of hooligans in my hometown. And, you know, we used to just purposely go out looking for fights, drunk. We'd be out. It was all about going, picking the fight. We went on organized shoplifting trips. I mean, we traveled abroad to different countries. We went to Sweden. We went to Denmark, and we were organized shoplifters, and we had just it was placed out. I mean, it was a form of organized crime, and we thought it was good. We'd sell all the gear, get the money, and use it for going out. That was it. That's what it was all about. I did have jobs. I did manage to hold jobs down. I mean, I left school 16. There were menial jobs to me, and I just went through. But I did start thieving from my jobs. I remember I had a penchant for stealing things, and I remember there was one company I worked for. It repaired cigarette machines. And I used to, like, they used to have a bunch of cigarette cartons in the back, and I'd get them, and I'd throw them in the dumpster. And I'd go back on an evening and get them, and I'd sell them. Again, it was selling to go out, party, drinking. I didn't realize that something was grasping me. I didn't realize I was naive youngster. About 18 years, 19, I moved to London. I went down to London. My mother and father, just to jump back, they got divorced when I was real young. And my biological father, he lived in London. I didn't really have much contact with him. I remember at an early age, when I had to leave him, I would be bawling and crying. I do remember that vividly. But I was fortunate. I was raised by three wonderful women, two deceased, and my mother still alive. My mum, my gran, my nan, who was deceased last year, and my great-grandmother. She treated me like she lost her son just after the Second World War. He got run over by a truck in Austria. It was her only son. The rest of them were daughters. And I think I was the son that she never had. And she looked after me. I mean, God bless her. She really did. She loved me, and I stole from her. I mean, I was terrible. I stole money from her, a pension money, to go out drinking. And I knew secretly, she knew, but she never said anything. And I've been many times to her gravestone and prayed and told her how sorry I am, because I can't make a direct amends. But I know I'm 101% sure she knows, and she's forgiven me. Back to London when I was living there. You know, it got crazy. I was hanging out with my buddies, going to all the latest clubs in London, the hippest scene, just drinking out on the tube. We'd drink the strongest beers we could get. Tennent's Super, I remember it well. Just four cans of that, and you'd be, just kill you. And we'd just go out, and, you know, we're listening to the music. It was all wonderful fun. When I look back, it was great. You know, I had a good time. I didn't realize I was feeding something that was going to manifest itself down the road. It was at that time in London I got introduced to the emergence of the illegal rave scene. I used to go to a lot of illegal parties off the M25 highway around London. And I got into that stage where I'll be looking at big floating balls swinging round a field, looking at laser beams and, you know, giving it all this. I always had a couple of cans handy. So, you know, it was at that point I started flip-flopping from booze to, you know, the other stuff. But alcohol was always the main culprit. Alcohol was the catalyst that set that other off in motion. Man, I went through more jobs in London. I drunk. I got fired from one place. Real prestigious hotel, the Hyde Park Hotel. I mean, like, movie stars stay there, politicians. And, you know, they hired me a couple of weeks later. They found me passed out in a linen cupboard. And, you know, they pulled me in the office, and the manager, she looks at me, she says, "You know why we're firing you?" I was like, "Yeah." And she handed me a wedge of £50 notes. I'm like, "Well, what's going on here?" So it's just a law in England. If you get fired from a job, they automatically pay you a mandatory 4 weeks vacation. So she handed me like 4 weeks paid vacation. And I'm like, whoa, this is cool. I went out, bought a jacket, went out, got drunk, but I was feeling homesick for Warmfield, that quiet, rural village, my family, my great-gran, and I decided to leave London, and I saw my dad off. That's the last time I saw him, when I was 18, and he took off to Caracas in Venezuela, and I drove through the night from London back up north to West Yorkshire. My dad gave me his old car, and I remember the first place I headed. I remember it vividly. It was a dawn morning, about 5:30 a.m. I went straight to my great grand's. I knew it was like a sanctuary there. It was peace. I knew everything was normal. And I went in. She greeted me, glad to see me. I sat down in front of the fire, and she put the bread. She always used to put bread on a fork and toast it in front of the fire, and she'd say, "You like it golden brown? Yeah, plenty of butter." So I did that, and it was really, really nice, to be home. While all this is going on, I always had a belief in a power greater than myself from being a little boy. I didn't go to church. It was put in there somehow. I forgot my higher power through all of this. Sometimes I remembered, and then it would just be forgotten for months, for years. And I see now, when I look back, how I was carried through this. I was given grace. There was a better plan for me, and I'm grateful for that. Around 22 years old, I started getting into being a DJ. I DJed at the raves, I DJed at the clubs, and life was great. I mean, it was great. You're in front of an audience, you're making people dance, they're happy. All these people, though, are just wasted. Completely. And that's what it was all about. My DJing took off because I did start locally, and then it started city to city, and then I started getting into better clubs that had a better name, and so on, and it really evolved. And the clubbing years really floored me. I mean, it's a wonder I'm still alive. I mean, it was insanity. When I look back, it is truly a wonder I'm alive. I played a club called The Orbit, and then I progressed on to a residency at a club called Back to Basics, which pretty much was voted the number one club in Great Britain. It's been running, this November will be 20 years, it's still going, and I go back there and play periodically. Some of my buddies, though, are still locked in that chaos that I was in. And I look at them and, I try and plant a seed, and that's all I can do, offer a suggestion. But I can see how they're locked in that world. They can't get out. And that's where I was going. I was fortunate to travel to countries all over the world. I got paid to fly to a nightclub, DJ, get totally drunk, free. That's what it was all about. I lost touch with reality. That's where my life went. It was it was like I was getting paid to do this. People were egging me on to do it, so it fed my ego more. My drinking got worse. Everything got worse, but I thought I was it. Thought all that glamour, all that excess, that was the way to go. I remember, I'd be in hotels just dotted around cities, the world, and they'd just be like regular families having a breakfast in the morning, and I'd just barge in, just spouting nonsense, just really out there. And I wonder, you know, what are those people thinking about me? You know, just turning up, just interrupting their daily life. I interrupted their life due to my selfishness and my addictions. It pretty much went on like that for 7 years. 7 years, I mean, the weekends would turn into Wednesday. Wednesday would be recovery to Friday. Off again. Off again. And it was like people expected me to be like that. I'd turn up at places and be like, they expected me to behave this certain way, to be this person that they perceived me to be, as a complete drunken, drugged up, lunatic DJ. I know, that's a terrible title. So, you know, again, it's feeding the ego. And, you know, pride for me has always been the toughest character defect to brush off. You know, the other ones I can catch myself, but pride and the ego, that's a tough one. I think it's something that, well, for me personally, it's something that's creeping in. I engage my brain now before I say things that, used to, you know, I'd say it thinking it would impress someone. And I catch myself, I don't need to say that. I don't need to have them, you know, think, hey, that sounded cool. So, you know, the pride really is it's been a tough one, but it's getting there. It was around this time, DJing, I was on tour in America. We'd been down at a Winter Music Conference in Miami, just, you know, completely out there. And we traveled up to Gainesville. And this is where I first met Jennifer, up in Gainesville in 95. And we talked, and then, you know, I went back to England. And it wasn't until I came back in 1996, I remember thinking, I hope I see that blonde-haired girl again. I hope I see her. I remember her. I hope I see her. And I was playing at the same club, and lo and behold, she came in there, and we just hit it off, and that was it. You know, it was a bit of a transatlantic love affair for maybe 9 months. Jennifer chose to move to England for almost a year, and she sampled my lifestyle over there. She sampled the whole kit and caboodle. We went traveling again around countries, and, you know, it was party time. That was my life. That's all I knew what to do. I didn't know what a job was. My job, and I got paid for it. Handsomely. I was lost, man. Distorted from reality. Really, really couldn't take the normal world. Just couldn't accept it or read it. People doing normal things, I'd like be driving, you know, in a car in the morning, looking at someone in a car and going, what's that all about? You know, they're going to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's like, that's pretty messed up. You know, jeepers. So anyways, you know, we had that year, almost a year in England, and I decided to move to America. We decided to get married in England, and I chose to come to England. One great regret I have moving over here, and I'm sorry I didn't go into my family members. I have a daughter in England, she's 19. And I left her at a young age. And we have a very good relationship now. All of us. She's a member of our family. And I've been there on the phone, but I've been there for her. Not physically. So she's a good kid. She could have gone totally the other way. She's in university. She's studying. She's got brains. She's a smart kid. I'm truly blessed. But she could have gone that way. Her mum suffers from alcoholism as well. So that's one thing. You know, we all wish we could turn the clock back on certain things in our lives, and missing out on seeing her, you know, growing up in school, taking her to school like I do my little girl now. Everything I do with my little girl now, I really regret that. But I'm positive that I'm going to be given time to make that up to her, you know, in my lifetime now. She's proud that I'm in AA. I've made amends to her, and she's like, "You don't have to do that, Dad." I'm like, "You know, I do. I'm concerned for her because she's out drinking with her buddies. I see her pictures on Facebook, and it's like how I was, all the partying and the drinking. It's pretty hardcore in England for the youth. They have a really bad problem with binge. Just the clubs are open all night, and it's really tough for the youth. So, started family life here in Orlando. I got gigs pretty much for 2 years here. I was fortunate enough to travel around the States. I got, you know, like 24 states I visited. It was awesome. Then, you know, the drinking, the you know, doing other substances, it was really taking over me. I stopped getting the gigs, and I got into this kind of has-been self-pity mode. It seemed like what I did was slipping away, and I was seeing all these things my friends were doing in England, and I was jealous of it. I was like, ah, and I used to delete everything I saw, delete everything that they were doing. And these are really close buddies. Should have been happy for them, calling them and going, you know, well done. But I didn't. I just felt sorry for myself, self-pity, a lost self-worth, what I did. That's the worst thing for me, was losing my self-worth. That sucks. I mean, it's... But AA has given me an opportunity to build that back. It truly has. I started doing jobs while I was here that I didn't enjoy doing. I just did it because I thought it was the right thing to do. I was earning some money, so that's fine. But I hated doing these jobs. I'm not kind of wired for the corporate world. It's not my gig. It isn't. I have a creative side to me that I need to, you know, get out. So I continued doing these jobs, partying at home. You know, our son was born, and that didn't stop me. You know, I just kept on drinking and just started from weekends to drinking in the week, just from one bottle of wine a night to two for myself. And then, you know, I'd hit that point on the come down the next morning, that point of despair. It says it in the book, you know, the four horsemen, despair, and just thinking what I did the night before and just wincing and just like, oh, I'm never going to do it again. Never. That's it. I'm never going to do it again. So I'd kind of stay off the booze for maybe a couple of weeks, and then bam, I was right back in. Right back into square one. And that carried on. Carried on. Carried on. Caused a lot of challenges at home. I mean, it was basically a dysfunctional family. my son was brought up in dysfunction. I can see part of that has rubbed off on him. I'm really working diligently with him to change that. I mean, it's good things happening, but when I look back, he's pretty much a victim of that. He didn't ask for it. He was just given it. And, you know, alcohol does that to us. Me, you know, having a family, I can see how that affects so many people around us, and you just don't think about that at the time. You think everything's okay, you know, gonna get by, self-centered, searching for that next high. So, you know, kept hopping through jobs here, what I didn't like. Gigs had completely gone. It turned into just staying at home then and drinking and partying and drinking and partying. And just, it was like I was in a loop, a vicious loop, just spinning. And I couldn't get out. Could not get out of it. I didn't have strength. I was weak. I was a weak man. I didn't think about praying to a higher power. Didn't think about that then. I knew something was up there, but I'd just turned my back on it for so long. I didn't really kind of get it, but it had always been there. There was times I'd, you know, say a real quick prayer. There was no kind of meaning in it, and it was just so blasé. There's nothing in it. It wasn't until probably the last 2 years of my drinking career that I started slipping into that, you know, kind of despair mode. I didn't know what to do. Family life was chaotic. I made out it was fine to everybody, you know. Everything was hunky-dory. Everything was smooth. Other family members thought, hey, I'm normal. I could pull it off. I could pull it off with family members at gatherings, Thanksgivings, Christmases. So many of those have wasted time that should be a special occasion that you share with your family, and, you know, just wasted time. Wasted. Last 2 years of the drinking, really tough. It got worse and worse, and you know, I was turning up late for work, missing jobs, and just keeping on that high, just to escape reality. That's all I'd ever known. And I knew I couldn't do that in a normal family life I'm trying to portray or do. I wanted that. I looked at other people and I was like, especially like when I took my son to school, all these normal family people, I really want what they've got. I used to feel like I was different from them because of what I did, and this was in a Catholic school he was going to. But I always felt odd and out of place. You know, and can they smell booze on my breath? I start to get, you know, paranoid about things like that, and picking them up, having to wear sunglasses, and not nice. It was around, you know, around my daughter's birth, solely. I think the coin dropped on me. I was out, she was in the car, she was a baby, maybe 9-10 months old. She had dark hair then, it was like in a little Mohican. She was born with a Mohican. Punk rock! And I'd been up all weekend, I was drunk, I hung over, And I was out with her just to score some substances. My daughter with me in a car. I was going in a house in a baby chair. I'll never forget. I was there doing the deal. And just, she's looking at me. Baby eyes. And I'm like, oh, man. Oh, this is not right. This is not right, man. This is not cool. This is not normal. So, you know, kept going on same old for a few more months. And, well, no, about another year. And it was in 2008, I had my last blowout. I went to Ibiza in the Balearic Islands for my 40th birthday. We met some friends over there and we had a blast. I mean, we had such a good time, but you know, of course, we were in the clubs, doing the same old, while the kids were being looked after by the in-laws. We were just in it. Came back from there, left my job straight away, because I was in that depression mode. I'd left all that partying and all the drinking. I was back to reality. Left my job. I had delusions of grandeur, thinking, and you know, I'm gonna move to Spain. I'm gonna speak Spanish. Just delusions. You know, it says in the book we have delusions, and I did. I thought, you know, hey, I'm gonna give it 3 years. I'm gonna be this. I'm gonna do this. 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 Nonsense. Christmas 2008, we were having Christmas dinner, of course. I was out, I was already drunk in the morning. Went out and got a bottle of vodka, completely toasted, blacked out, woke up like midnight. And I just like, whoa, what's going on? It caused a terrible argument with my wife and I, and she left. And at that point, I was like in ultimate despair. So I just got on my knees. I was like, please, please, just help me. Just like that. Next day, I went to an AA meeting at St. Stephen's Church in Longwood. Nobody told me to go. Just thought, I've heard, you know, about it through family members, but I just went in there. It was on, it's day after Christmas Day is well known for me. It's called Boxing Day. It's celebrated in, you know, Australia, England, South Africa. So it's that's an important day for me. And I went in there, you know, just didn't know what I was doing. Started going to meetings, very nonchalant again, wasn't listening. Went through 1 year being sober, but I just didn't get it. I wasn't listening. I was, again, pride, ego, more worried about what I'm going to say than what this program can do for me, what I can get from others, the help, the knowledge, the experiences, strengths, hopes. It was all about ego. And it wasn't until I really worked the steps with a sponsor, really got the moral inventory out and realized, you know, what a shyster I really was. Mega shyster. And it started to slowly dawn on me. And, you know, I thank AA for God. It kind of gave me a... I always look at it like a radio that, you know, it's when the frequency's on, all that static, and it's... And, kind of tune me in to my higher power, whom I choose to call God. Many of you may have other higher powers, and that's great. If it helps you, more power to you. And it wasn't until 2010 that I really started knuckling down due to just stuff happening in life, and I really focused on building my faith, trying to help others. You know, the feeling I get when you help someone, you know, whether it's AA or just out in the world. And there's been times, you know, where you've just, someone's given you such a, wow, thanks, you did that for me. There's no better happiness than that. Money can't buy it. That's the golden nugget for me personally, and I'm sure for all of you as well that's experienced that. When you get that from another human, you know, it's like, I've done something right. It's what I'm supposed to do. This is what we're supposed to do as humans. Not all that other stuff, self-centered. And, you know, that's something that I chase. I ask for it daily. Whom will you put in my life who I can help? You know? Who can you put there who I can help today? Whoever it may be. Might be just smiling at a lady at Publix behind the counter, saying a nice word. You know, people are taken back when you're pleasant to them. So, I am truly, truly grateful for what this program has given me. I've met some wonderful people along the way, true human beings. And it's remarkable how, you know, a program like this has reached out to thousands of people from a simple idea from a guy back in the 30s. Just thought back to what I was saying. He thought, you know, I'll go out and help someone else. Help someone else with my complaint, what I have, I'll give it to another who has the same complaint. What a concept, man. You know, love your neighbor as yourself, it says it all. If you love yourself, you know, I'm building my self-worth. If you love yourself internally, you can portray that onto others. You can give them that. They can see the light. You can give that freely back and be happy about it. So, I want to thank each and every one of you for coming here tonight and listening to me. I'm extremely honored. And it's just been good to talk to you guys. And keep coming back if you're newcomers, because if this program can do to me the guy I was, man, I mean, it really works. It truly works. It really, really works if you work it. Thanks a lot, everybody. Thank you.